Hallo, schön, dass du da bist, hier beim Podcast Happy, Holy and Confident, dein Podcast fürs Herz und den Verstand. Mein Name ist Laura Marlina Seiler und ich freue mich so sehr, heute eins meiner absoluten Interview-Highlights in diesem Jahr zu teilen. Und zwar hatte ich den wunderbaren Jay Shetty bei mir zu Gast. Und dieses Interview hat mich so tief berührt und beflügelt und inspiriert. Und ich bin mir sicher, dass es bei dir genauso sein wird. Falls du Jay noch nicht kennst, ich habe Jay dieses Jahr im Februar in L.A. kennengelernt, bei der Filmpremiere von unserem gemeinsamen Freund Lewis House. Und Jay Shetty ist der mittlerweile erfolgreichste Social-Media-Influencer, kann man so sagen, in Amerika oder fast sogar weltweit für spirituellen Content. Und Jay Shetty hat nach seinem Wirtschaftsstudium in London selbst für 3 Jahre als Mönch gelebt in Indien. Und nach den 3 Jahren haben die Mönche in Indien zu ihm gesagt, dass es für ihn Zeit ist, dieses Wissen jetzt in die moderne Welt zu bringen. Und seitdem ist es die Vision von Jay Shetty, spirituelle Weisheiten, uralte spirituelle Weisheiten, modern in die moderne Welt zu bringen. Und er macht fantastische Videos und einfach so unglaublich inspirierenden Content. Mittlerweile folgen ihm über 35 Millionen Menschen. Ich weiß gar nicht, wie oft seine Videos angeschaut worden sind. Wahrscheinlich mehrere 100 Millionen Mal. Und er hat gerade sein neues Buch veröffentlicht, das Think Like a Monk Prinzip, das sofort in den USA, in Indien, in Großbritannien, in Australien auf Platz 1 gegangen ist, was einfach fantastisch ist, weil es mich natürlich auch so sehr freut, dass dieses Wissen jetzt noch mehr Menschen erreichen darf. Und ich habe mit Jay darüber gesprochen, wie uns dieses spirituelle Mindset auch im Alltag helfen kann. Was ist Spiritualität überhaupt? Wie können wir Spiritualität leben? Was tun wir, wenn unser Umfeld vielleicht überhaupt gar nicht spirituell ist, wir aber gerade unsere eigene Spiritualität entdecken? Was tun wir, wenn unser Partner oder unsere Partnerin vielleicht sogar unsere Spiritualität irgendwie ablehnt? Gleichzeitig haben wir darüber gesprochen, wie finde ich eigentlich meine eigene Berufung? Und da hat er 3 ganz tolle Tipps gegeben. Und generell war es einfach eins dieser Gespräche. Ich glaube, ich hätte mit ihm 12 Stunden einfach durchsprechen können. Wahrscheinlich werden wir irgendwann auch nochmal ein zweites Interview aufnehmen, aber ich wünsche dir jetzt erstmal mit dieser Folge ganz viel Freude, ganz viel Inspiration. Das Interview ist auf Englisch und du findest wie immer bei mir auf dem Blog die komplette deutsche Übersetzung und auf dem YouTube-Video kannst du auf Untertitel klicken und da haben wir dir auch die kompletten deutschen Untertitel eingefügt. Das heißt, du kannst dann einfach quasi mitlesen und ansonsten versteht man ihn aber auch fantastisch. Ja, und ich wünsche dir jetzt einfach so viel Freude mit diesem Interview. Ich bin ganz, ganz glücklich, es mit dir teilen zu können. Und wie immer freue ich mich natürlich riesig, wenn du danach bei mir auf Instagram vorbeischaust, @LauraMarlinaSeiler, und mir deine Gedanken dalässt zu der Folge. Was hast du für dich mitgenommen? Wozu inspiriert sie dich? Was waren so deine wertvollsten Erkenntnisse aus dieser Folge? Und ja, ich freue mich riesig, da von dir zu hören. Denn der schönste Austausch findet eigentlich immer nach der Podcast-Folge bei mir auf Instagram unter dem Post statt. Und ich schicke dir jetzt eine riesige Umarmung. Viel Spaß mit dem Interview mit Jay Shetty. I am so happy and grateful to have Jay Shetty on the podcast today. Thank you for being here. Good morning to Los Angeles from Denmark.
Oh, it's amazing. Good evening where you are, I think.
Actually, it's 8 o'clock in the evening here. I'm in Denmark right now because we are recording something. And you have the beginning of the day, I have the night.
Denmark is so beautiful. So
it's amazing.
Yeah, it's wonderful. But thank you so much. I'm so grateful to be with you. And I'm so looking forward to this conversation. And I loved meeting you earlier this year. And I'm just so glad that we're connected. So thank you so much.
Me too. Thank you. So I would like to ask just one question because I know that you're in the middle of an amazing book launch right now. So the world is freaking out about your book, Think Like a Monk. And you're number one, I think, in UK, India, US, which is amazing. Congratulations to that. And I was just wondering today,
How is Ajay Shetty dealing with all the stress right now? I mean, there is a lot of pressure and there's like this excitement, but also the pressure. What will people think maybe about the book? How is your inner dialogue at the moment? Like, how do you calm down? How do you create your days so that you, don't freak out yourself?
So it's a good question. It's a very good question. First of all, I feel extremely grateful and humbled because of the incredible response we've had in the first 24 hours of the book actually being in people's hands. And I just feel so amazed at the amazing community that we've created over the last 3 to 4 years that has just shown up again and again and again. When I started my videos and no one knew who I was and people discovered me and supported me. Last year when we launched my podcast, I felt so much love from so many people listening. And then now the book, and I feel the same level of support again. So my heart deeply thanks everyone who's supporting me. And in terms of my schedule and how I deal with it and how I process it, the one thing I deeply believe in is in the preparation stage, it's really important to do everything you can before you come to the moment where everything takes off. So for me, preparation is really important, preparing your mind, preparing your body, preparing your energy for what you're about to enter into. Just like you did before we started our podcast today, you said you chant a mantra before you enter. If you look at an athlete prepares themselves on the training ground, not on the pitch or the court or the field. And so I believe that for me, I've been preparing for this time for the last few months. And because of my focus on the preparation and the energy that went into the preparation, I'm able to come here. And I said this to a friend the other day. I said, I've worked my hardest to write the best book that I can, to create the best way of sharing the book when it's out. And now I just have to experience it. Now I just have to live it. And now I just have to go with whatever comes because I've already done everything beforehand. And at the same time, I also know that this time is going to be the most stressful, the most pressure filled. So give you an example. I was up until 1 a.m. doing an interview with England because I did Good Morning Britain in England. I then had the Today Show in New York at 5 a.m. So I went to sleep for about 2-3 hours. I woke up to do the Today Show. And then I've been up since then doing interviews because I'm having to do them in all different cities across the world. And I also realized that this is a time of sacrifice and this is a time of challenge. And I just had to be prepared before. So I made sure that I was sleeping really well before this week. I made sure that I was exercising before this week. And this week, a lot of stuff will all be all over the place. But that's okay because that's what life is like. And this is why I put so much emphasis on the preparation, because you can't stop pain in the moment. You have to prepare and then you have the muscle to deal with the challenge. And so I'm still working on it every day, but I'm expecting this week. I'm expecting to be tired. I'm expecting to be exhausted. I'm expecting to be busy, but that's part of it. That is a big part of it. And I'm okay with that. I'm at ease with that.
That's amazing. Thank you. I think it's good to know that on the one hand that also Ajay Shetty can get like a little bit stressed. That's good.
Definitely. Oh, definitely. I don't want anyone thinking that there is anyone in the world who doesn't get stressed. And the only thing I would say, and this is what we're all working on to think like monks, is that the better you get at dealing with stress doesn't mean you don't feel stress. It means you experience it for less time. So maybe in the past, before you had the monk mindset, before you had spirituality, you may have contemplated a pain or a suffering for a month. And now as you start developing, you realize now you only think about it for a week. And then slowly you're only thinking about it for an hour. And then slowly you're only thinking about it for a minute. And then slowly you still think about it, but it's gone in a second. But that doesn't mean you don't experience it for even a moment. And so I deal with stress. I have bad days. But what I realize is that those are all part of it. And actually, our mistake is labeling them as bad days. And instead, if we don't label them and we don't judge the moment, but we simply ask, what have I learned today? What is today teaching me? what is the message that I'm receiving today from the universe and the world, then every day becomes a blissful place to live.
That's amazing. Yeah, it's nice. So you said something for all the people listening right now in Germany. You said a monk mindset. So some people are like, what? So for everyone maybe not knowing you and your story, your life story, which I think is so inspiring, maybe we can just do like a quick detour into your past so that you maybe sure. tell us about how did the title of that book came up? Because I mean, I think it's very unique, your story. So maybe why is the book called, in German, it's called Das Think Like a Monk Prinzip. So why is the book called like that?
Absolutely. So I was born and raised in London, and I grew up like any other young person, thinking that life was about getting a good degree, getting a good job, getting married, having children, and then just living life. And I was really fortunate because when I was young, I started to read about people's lives who made a difference in the world. I was fascinated by people like Martin Luther King and Malcolm X. I remember reading David Beckham's autobiography, and I remember reading Dwayne The Rock Johnson's autobiography when I was in my teens. And it was just expanding my mind to just people who had done things that not many people had done. They'd sacrificed their life in different ways. And I was really focused on that. And then once, when I was 18 years old, I was invited to hear a monk speak. And I was thinking, what am I going to learn from a monk? Like, what is a monk going to teach me? A monk went from nothing to nothing. I want to learn about people who went from nothing to something. And so I went there feeling very skeptical. And when I went there, this is the beauty of life, that it humbles you and it breaks your ego. I went there with the ego of, what am I going to learn? And I was completely humbled that day, because when the monk spoke, it spoke to my heart. And the monk was talking about how the greatest thing we can do in our lives is use our gifts in the service of others. And when he said that, my 18-year-old self was just mesmerized. And now when I look back at it in hindsight, I realize that when I was 18, I'd met people who were beautiful. I'd met people who were rich. I'd met people who were famous. But I don't think I'd met anyone who was truly happy. And he was joyful, and he had meaning in his life, and he had purpose in his life. And so I started spending my summer vacations and my holidays training with him. And then when I graduated at 21, 22, I went and lived as a real monk and traveled and lived across India, Europe, and England. And that time for me was so precious. And when I left that path after 3 years, I was reading and researching about the studies done on monk brains. And all the scientific studies on monks' brains show that monks have the happiest, most calm, and most joyful brains on the planet. So for me, the reason why the book is called The Think Like a Monk Principle in Germany and Think Like a Monk in other parts of the world is because I want everyone to have access to that joy, that happiness, that calm that already exists within themselves. And also, because monks dedicate their life to wisdom and mastering the mind. So if you look at things that you're passionate about, so I know in Germany, and I'm a big football fan, I know Germany have a phenomenal football team. And I recently saw the highlights of the Bayern Munich Barcelona game that I don't think anyone will ever stop talking about. And if you think about, if you wanted to learn football, you would go to some of your German national team. They're phenomenal players and they've won the World Cup. And so you may want to learn football from them. You may want to learn how to perform from Beyonce. You may want to learn how to play tennis from Serena Williams. Well, if you want to understand the mind, there's no one better than monks, because they've dedicated their life to understanding the mind.
It's beautiful. Thank you so much. I would like to talk about one very particular, but I think so important thing you said. You said that your ego was saying, no, don't go there. Don't listen to the monk. What is he going to teach me? So do you think that sometimes we stand in our own ways because we have like prejudices about certain things, and then we don't do things which would actually be good for us? And how did did you actually manage to go there? Like, what did make you go instead of not going?
Yeah, I think it's very natural to have reservations about things based on our background, based on our parenting, based on our education. And so it's not wrong to have blocks because we all have them. And it's not bad to have blocks because we all have them. We all grow up with different cultures, different backgrounds, different walks of life, and all of that create blocks and boundaries in our life. But as we become adults, we have the choice of which blocks we want to keep and which blocks we want to let go. So I grew up in a society where someone's status was considered to be based on their success in their career, their success in their academic lives. And the monk, funnily enough, he had that. He had an incredible degree from one of the top universities in India, but he'd given it all up. So that really stood out to me. But my ego was blocking me from my own growth. And I think our ego blocks us often because we believe that we already know everything, or we already understand everything we need to know. And this is actually the biggest challenge also as a guide or a sharer or a creator of content, is you have to constantly remind yourself that you're just at the beginning, that you don't know. And that's a really big, important part for me and why I have a podcast, is because when I interview people on my podcast, I'm just a student. I'm just listening. I'm not trying to teach them or guide them or share with them. I'm actually just trying to understand more about life. And so to me, I think we think that ego is confidence, but actually ego blocks us from gaining real confidence, because real confidence comes from understanding many perspectives and cultures. And so the only thing that got me there that night was a little bit of curiosity. And the real thing that got me that night was my friends. And this is why it's the age-old wisdom of the people that we have around us, the company that we keep. It's infectious. Both positivity and negativity, studies show, are infectious. So I was lucky that some of the people that I started spending time with at 18 were moving in that direction. And so I just got, you know, in India, it's described, in the monk tradition, it's described like being in a flowing river, that even if you don't want to go in that direction, the river will push you there anyway. And so good friends, good people, good energy is like a flowing river, that even if you don't want to go, you can't stand it, it will just push you in that direction.
That's nice. Thank you for sharing. When you decided to become a monk, and you said that in the society you grew up, in the family you grew up, what was important was like your academic background, and that you are successful in like the world, how we think success is. How did your family react when you came home and said, Mama, Papa, I'm going to be a monk? How did they react? How was that conversation?
Yeah, good question. I told my parents when I met the monk, pretty much the first time after I came back from India, when I was visiting, just visiting, not living there properly, I said I wanted to be a monk. And my parents didn't believe me because they just thought he's 18, 19. What does he know anyway? And I have to be honest and say my parents are amazing. They've always been very supportive of any of my decisions, not because they understood it, but because they just allowed me to become my own person. And a lot of my good qualities and kindness and stuff comes from my mother, who's just the most selfless person I know, and would do anything for me and is amazing. And a lot of my focus and my determination and my discipline comes from my father, because he has that energy. And you know, my sister as well has always been the most loving person and let me become myself. So my close family was actually okay with it. But actually, it was more the extended society and community, and even some of my friends at college and university, that were like, Jay, you realize you're committing career suicide. You realize if you do this, you're never going to get a job again. You realize if you do this, you're throwing away everything. And if it doesn't work out, then there won't be another path for you. And so there was this lot of this pressure from the opinions, the expectations, and the obligations. And now, for everyone listening and watching, I want you to think about this. You may not want to be a monk, but the journey of being a monk for me is the same as your journey of living your purpose. When you choose to live your purpose, which actually is an act of rebellion, Becoming a monk is an act of rebellion. And when you're breaking society's rules or community's rules that are there, they're all unsaid rules, by the way. There's no one who's printed these rules out. They're just in our heads. They're just in our minds. When you're breaking through them, if you're sitting there listening right now, whether you're in Germany or anywhere in the world, and you're thinking, I don't want to be an engineer. I want to be an artist. Or you're thinking, I don't want to be a doctor. I want to be a yoga teacher. I don't want to be an accountant. I want to be an author, right? If you're sitting there thinking that, my journey of becoming a monk is the same journey you're going to have to take in your own life. And so for me, my battle and challenge was with the extended community and society, not necessarily with my direct parents. But I was so convinced, and I had experimented and tested the life so much in those summer holidays, even if I was just visiting for 2 weeks or a month and I was just taking a break to be there, I had got so immersed in it that I was convinced it was the right step. And this is the biggest lesson here, that you can't make a step and know something is right for you unless you have tested it, experienced it, and immersed yourself in it. So if you're saying, I want to be a yoga teacher, if you've not been on a one-month yoga retreat, you won't know. If you're saying you want to be a coach, but you've never coached people one-on-one, you just won't know. And if you want to be an author and if you never tried writing or publishing a book, you just won't know. And so for most of us, we're trying to figure out who we are in our heads, when actually the process is much more with our hands and doing something.
Yeah, that's beautiful. Thank you so much for sharing. I think this is such an important point, because sometimes we paint the world in our head and think that would be nice, but if you don't experience it, you actually don't know. So your family, I would just like to go back there for 1 second. Is your family very spiritual, or what was spirituality something you discovered for yourself being a monk?
Yeah, my parents, I would say growing up, were ritualistically religious. So in the sense of, they would do the prayers and the practices, but it wasn't necessarily deeply explained or understood. And then when I was 10 years old, my father got deep into spirituality and went on his own spiritual search. And I think that also opened up the door for me to find myself. And I'd say my mom is naturally an angel and found spirituality through me, after me, but she had it in her already. And same with my sister. She found it a similar time as me. So I would say that, yeah, my family right now are extremely spiritual. If anything, they're more disciplined and better than I am. And they're very spiritual and just such beautiful people. And again, all on our own journeys, but they have that in them. And I think especially my mother, and she already had it within her. She just needed to be connected to the path and understand it a bit better. But yes, they are.
That's beautiful. What is your definition of spirituality?
So my definition of spirituality is the deepest, most authentic understanding of ourselves beyond our mind, body, and ego, but recognizing the consciousness and the soul that exists within each and every single one of us. And at the same time, being really aware of the source, the divine, of the higher power and energy that exists, that really encapsulates everything around us. And spirituality is the path that connects us with that higher consciousness. So spirituality is actually a path. It's a process. It's a step-by-step guide. That's what spirituality really is. It's the process that connects you with not only your deepest self, but your highest source.
Beautiful. I love that. Thank you so much for sharing. And I think what is nice, what you said, that spirituality is a path. It's something you actually do. It's something you walk along and you make certain experiences while walking it. This is beautiful. And I think what was also nice, what you said, that in your family, that you're all spiritual, but everyone in their own way. So there is not this one thing of spirituality that is the same for everyone, but it is something, if I understand you correctly, that is for everyone, it is the same, but different in experiencing it.
For sure. Laura, yeah. I just want to take a moment to say what an incredible listener you are.
Thank you.
Like, I'm just really, really impressed. Like, and I'm not just saying that as flattery. I, I feel so present with you. And even the way I'm sharing today, I feel so happy because I'm speaking at the pace that I like speaking at. And that's because of you and your energy. So I just want to thank you. I want to thank you for that. I just had to pause for a second to say that, but you're right. Yeah. I don't think that people find or practice spirituality in the same way. What I mean by that is the principles and the tools and the philosophies and practices are pretty much the same for everyone if we really want to do it. But the way in which spirituality is expressed is very different. So going back to the analogy of sport, everyone on that pitch is a football player, but they all express it differently. One is a defender, one is a striker, one's a midfielder. And you can apply that to anything, whether it's drama, dance, musicians. You know, someone's a viola player, someone's a clarinet player, someone's a violin player. Everyone's a musician, but everyone expresses their music differently. And that's how the soul works. The soul is personal, and your expression of your spirituality will be different to mine, even though the pathway can be very similar in practice to get there.
It's beautiful. I have I actually don't know from whom this quote is. I even don't know if it's a quote, but it's like that the universe, it's like a verse, like a song, and we all sing our own song, but together it's like a universe, like one song. Like a symphony, and we all sing together in like the universe, sort of, which I think is a beautiful picture of imagining how everything is at the end connected. Yeah.
That is so beautiful. I've never actually, one second, I'm just going to sit cross-legged. I've never actually heard that before, but that's absolutely beautiful. I love that. And actually, it connects really meaningfully to how I speak about service in the book. And I talk about how the only way, so using what you just said, the only way to truly be aligned with the universe, as you were pointing out this quote or this thought, which I've just learned about, the only way to truly be aligned is by doing what the universe is always doing. And so in the book, I talk about how as monks, we were taught that the universe is always serving. So if you look at trees, they're always providing shade. They provide fruits and they provide flowers. The water is always flowing and providing us with a source of energy. Oxygen is abundantly provided to all the animals on the planet. The universe is constantly thinking about everyone else and serving. And so the only way to be aligned with the universe, that uni part, is by service. And when you serve, you're now in complete alignment with the universe, because that's what the universe is doing.
That's beautiful. Yeah. There's one thing I just want to add, because I was just reading a book right now, which is from a German. His name is Peter Wohlleben, and he wrote a book about woods and trees, and he's doing like science on trees, and he found out it's amazing. It's really, really amazing. He actually found out that trees are nurturing through their roots little trees, like as if a mother would be nurturing their babies. They are giving like the sugar through their roots to little trees that don't get the sun. And they also have like an internet through mushrooms that give information through the woods, which is crazy, like how it's all interconnected. And only this is already, and then you're like, there's no God. Yeah, of course.
Absolutely.
So I have one more question regarding the spiritual path. So many people listening right now, I know, are on their own spiritual path, and a lot of women actually listening probably right now, also men, but mainly women. And I get the question so often, Laura, I'm so excited about like my own spiritual, let's call it awakening, and everything I learn about myself. And my partner is like not interested at all, and maybe even judging my spirituality. So maybe from your own experience, what can you do when you feel so excited also about something? We all know it when we find out about something, especially like all the stuff you want to tell everyone. And sometimes it's difficult then, especially in a relationship or with your parents, if they don't agree or even judge what you're doing. So how can we deal with that?
One of the first things to do is to remember when you were at their stage. So there may have been a time in your life where even if you weren't negative towards spirituality, you may not have been proactive about it. And maybe think about the first time someone told you to read a book, or maybe think about the first time someone asked you to go to a course or a seminar, and think about the first time you went to a yoga class or a meditation class. And just think about the first ever time you were introduced to it and how you reacted. And think about how different that is now. And that compassion that we need to feel for others is just because we've now had that breakthrough moment in that realization and that glimpse does not mean that everyone around us is going to suddenly have it at the same time, at the same pace, in the same way. And so the first thing is to actually create compassion in our lives, both for ourselves and for the other person. And for me, I go back to that day of, you know, judging the monk and not thinking that the monk had anything to teach me. I go back to that as my anchor of compassion all the time when I feel someone doesn't understand what I'm trying to share. And so my compassion tolerance is really high because I know that I made the same mistakes. And even if you didn't make the same mistakes, recognize that you've been fortunate to then have another experience that has got you there quicker. So that's one thing. And that compassion makes us realize we're not above anyone or we're not ahead of anyone. The compassion actually makes us realize that everyone is on their own journey. And I think as soon as you feel you now know and someone doesn't know, that relationship is not going to work. That's not going to help that progress. The second thing you have to ask yourself is, who is the best person to deliver the message for this person at this time?
Oh, that's great. I love this.
Yeah, it may not be you. And it may not be you because sometimes it's the hardest thing to teach our own loved ones about spirituality and about life because they've seen all our mistakes. They've seen all our imperfections. They've seen all our angry moments, our sad moments, our mad moments. And it's so hard to do that. And so think to yourself, who could I introduce this person to that will inspire them? Maybe my partner loves sports and there's a motivational speaker who talks about sports and spirituality. Maybe that's the right person. Or maybe there's my partner is really into photography and maybe there's a spiritual photographer that they'll really connect with. How can you actually connect them with someone that they genuinely will connect with? Not in a manipulative way, not in a covert way, but actually getting out of the way of that person. So sometimes we want to be that person. And more often than not, we're not that person. And the third thing, which is really important, is to meet someone at the stage that they are at. So people can only get to the next stage where they are, not to the next stage of where you are. So if you're currently studying PhD mathematics, and you try and teach me and Laura, I don't know if you're a PhD mathematician, but I'm guessing you're not, and I'm not. If we were talking to a PhD mathematician and the mathematician was just talking about PhD math, me and you would just be lost. But if they said, wait a minute, let's just talk about pi, or let's talk about algebra, or let's talk about some Pythagoras' theorem or something like that.
Let's start there.
All one plus one, yeah. And then we'd go, okay, I understand. And so we can't talk to people about the things about where we are at. We have to find a new community for that. I coach so many young men who are in relationships with their partners. And I speak to other women who have relationships in the same way. And so many times the men or the women will say to me like, oh, I don't have the best philosophical discussions with my partner. I don't have the best spiritual discussions. And I say, well, sometimes your partner's role is not to have the best spiritual discussion. You can create that with your own groups and communities. Your partner's role is to support your spiritual growth. And I think this is a really important factor that being spiritual together doesn't mean doing everything spiritual together. What it means is that you're supporting that person on their growth journey and they're supporting you. Now, if you're receiving negativity or you're receiving condescending words or emotional abuse in that way, then you have to decide how much you're willing to tolerate and accept before you don't think this is going to have a future, versus understanding that actually they're a good person. They care about me. They love for me. They don't understand this part of my life. But maybe if they see a change in me and they see me not be so forceful, then maybe they'll come around to it in their own time. And I think forcing something down someone's throat is probably the worst way to help them rise to it.
It's so beautiful. Thank you. That helps so much. And there are actually a few points I would like to point out, because I think it's really important. So one thing you said is about compassion. And I think what sometimes there is in the spirituality bubble, like this misunderstanding that being spiritual is just always, it's easy and you're light and it's all like you're floating through the universe. And I think, like, for me, what I learned in my relationship, and I also have a little son, it's to actually live by what you learned, and that you actually live it in your daily life. And it is practicing compassion, for example, which is sometimes difficult, but this is then actually where you are spiritual. This is when you really start living it. And I think it's easy to be spiritual when you're sitting on your meditation pillow and everything is nice and easy, but it's like real spirituality, I think, is happening in the daily life, and especially when it's difficult. And then not to judge the other one, but to like keep connected to your heart and don't break the connection to the other person. So this I found really interesting that you said that.
Yeah, you just reminded me of it. It's important to remember that spirituality shouldn't make you feel better. It should actually make you feel deeper. And you know, that's a really important thing. Like, being spiritual doesn't make you better than anyone or higher than anyone or more realized than anyone. Because the moment you feel more realized or better, that defeats spirituality in and of itself. And so just understanding that soul is on their own path, and I have a duty, if we're in love, to help them on their path. But let me think about who's the right person, when's the right time, what is the right way? Where is the right place? That's what a spiritual person does, is consciously, intentionally understand what is the environment. It's like growing a plant. You may want to grow a plant in your garden, but if you don't plant it in the right place and you don't water it in the right way and it doesn't get access to the right sun, it won't grow. And that relates to giving spirituality to others. If you're not intentional about it, just like you would be about a plant, That plant will die very early and they won't have a chance.
It's so nice, this metaphor, because I was just thinking that I think sometimes it's like people are sitting next to their plant and are judging it all the time. Like, why don't you grow quicker? Why don't you look the way I want you to look? And they're just sitting there like this and being angry with the plant. And of course, then the plant is just saying, yeah, come on, fuck off. You know? So I think this picture helps a lot to instead maybe just give the plant what the plant needs and not what you want the plant to be like.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
that's really nice. So I have one more question, because I mean, I also wrote books, and I think it's a very difficult process and it's very challenging, especially if it's your first book. So I know that many people who are listening as well want to do what you said in the beginning. They have their own monk way, what they want to do. And how was the beginning when you were writing the book? Do you had any kind of doubts where you think like, can I do this? And how did you actually get through it?
Yeah, so I've been thinking about writing the book for the last 4 years. And so what I try and do is I plant the seed of an idea much earlier than I expect it to grow. And so I always start thinking about things early and then let them naturally grow and progress, so that by the time I get to actually writing it, I feel like I'm in a good space to write it. But for this book, it was a challenge, because what we were doing in effect was bringing together stories, science, and strategies for personal transformation. So when someone reads this book, you're not just going to hear about my journey and some monk stories and wisdom. You're going to find ancient wisdom from multiple traditions, multiple pathways. You're going to see the science that proves that it works. so that you can actually speak about this in a really educated way so you can share how this affects the mind. And at the same time, there's tools and practices and techniques and try this sections in every few pages of the book with things you can do every day. So we had incredible researchers that were helping me find the science. And it was really important in piecing that puzzle together effectively, because I believe our mind needs all three things to transform. We need stories that inspire. We need science that makes us believe. And we need strategies to actually practice. And so to me, the hardest part or the biggest challenge of the book was really piecing that puzzle together so that we had the perfect amount of each of them.
That's beautiful. So it's just like, you gave yourself also the time to develop yourself into the book, sort of, so that it could come out of you, and you gave yourself the time. Yeah, I think that's really nice. There's one, I'm not sure if I'm going to find it now, but there is this one graphic in the book. I'm talking and looking for it, so hopefully I will find it now, which is about how to find your passion and to live your Dharma, I think.
Yes.
This is what it is about. Maybe you can tell.
Maybe you can.
It's chapter five. Do you know? No. Well, in German, maybe it's another page. I hope I find it. Maybe you can tell us a little bit about how to, what Dharma is and how we find it. And I mean, it's a bit what we talked about in the beginning, but I just know that so many people are very much on the way to live and find their Dharma, but they are so afraid. I think this is very often like this fear of being judged. And there's one question before this, because I read that you had this vision of making all the spiritual knowledge viral, to let it go viral so that many people get in touch with it. And you tried to work with other media companies before you did it your own way, and they rejected you. So, I mean, today I think they will go like, oh man, but I mean, it's the best thing that could happen, because probably else it wouldn't go the way it went. But how did you deal back then with that rejection? Because I think this is an important part of living your Dharma, to maybe also deal with being rejected. And I'm going to look while you talk for the for the graphic.
So I was in the corporate world. I had a steady corporate job, and it was a 9 to 8 job. I'd work from 9 a.m. to 8 p.m. And it was good. I had a good career going in the right direction. And I'm sure many of you do as well. But I wasn't satisfied or fulfilled, or didn't feel like I was living my purpose. I felt like I was learning. And this is a really important piece. If you don't like where you are, ask yourself, how can I learn from it? Because if you learn from it, you won't even like it. You'll love it, because you'll see it as part of your journey. So there are so many skills that I learned from the corporate world that are so integral to what I do today. And if I didn't have that experience and learn from it, then I actually wouldn't be where I am today. So that's the first important part. The second is that when I started having this idea, I was sharing my idea with lots of people and media companies and pitching the idea. I hadn't created anything. And my idea was rejected by 10 media companies in London. And it was really heartbreaking, because I just felt so passionately about it. But here's the thing, passion is not enough. And so then I pitched it to 3 media executives that were well known. One said to me, you're too old. One said to me, and I was 28 at the time, one said to me, you're too old to do this, because everyone who wants to do this is 21. The other one said to me, you're too underqualified. You don't have the right degrees. And the other one said, why do you want to take a risk? You should just stay in your steady job. And so again, I was faced with rejection. And again, it was so painful to deal with that, because I was passionate. But remember, passion isn't enough. And so I realized a really important thing. And there's a beautiful quote by Thomas Edison, where he says that when you think you've explored, when you believe you have exhausted all options, remember this, you haven't. And that thought from Thomas Edison was so powerful to me at the time, because I was trying every door. I was trying to open every door, and every door was shutting on me, but I had to believe that I just hadn't yet found the right way. And I ended up running out of all options apart from starting a social media channel, which I didn't even think would work. Genuinely, hand on my heart, I really didn't believe. I was like, that works for Justin Bieber. That doesn't work for anyone else. It's definitely not going to work for me. But I was like, I'm run out of options, so I have to try this. And here's what I realized. Demonstrating your skills is better than defending them. So a lot of us present our skills and we try and defend what we know rather than demonstrating our skills. And so I could talk to these media companies all day about my vision for videos and what they would look like and what they would sound like. But actually, when I had to make them, when I actually created them, then they could see it. Then everyone could see that it could work or it couldn't work. And so passion isn't enough. So in the book, I talk about this principle called Dharma. Dharma, translated into English, could mean eternal purpose or inherent potential. It's your natural inclination. And so purpose or Dharma, as an equation, purpose or Dharma equals passion plus strengths plus compassion. And inside the book, I give you a 33 questionnaire, which actually helps you find your Dharma and understand it better. But here I'm breaking it down to make it simple for this interview. So passion, strengths, and compassion. So first ask yourself, what am I passionate about? And that you might have already figured out. You might already probably know what you're kind of into, but you're scared of taking that leap into your passion. And you know the reason why you're scared? Is because you haven't yet worked on the strengths. Strengths is what gives you confidence. I am so passionate about football. I love playing it. I love the sport. I brought it up 3 times in this interview and everyone's thinking, Jay, really? Are you spiritual? But the reason I bring it up is I'm passionate about football, but I don't have the desire to become really good at it. I don't have the determination to make it a strength. And so it's remained a hobby in my life. But when I wanted to be a communicator, when I wanted to create content, I taught myself how to edit. Every night I would get home at 8, 9 p.m. and I would learn to edit from 9 p.m. to 2 a.m. I would spend 5 hours a day, 5 days a week to edit 1 5-minute video to release a video every week because I didn't have any money to pay anyone to edit and I didn't know how to edit. So I had to teach myself. But I had the determination. At the same time, I spent age 11 to age 18, I went to public speaking and drama school that my parents forced me to go to. And I'm so grateful to them for that because I learned so much about communication. And again, I'm so grateful I became a monk because that's where I learned the wisdom that I want to share. But all of it has to become a strength. It can't be just a passion. You have to work on it. So if you really want to be an author, take writing classes, read great books, analyze them. If you really want to be the next best yoga teacher, learn from yoga teachers, learn all the asanas, practice them daily. It's going to take a committed effort. And here's the final part of purpose that's really important. It's compassion. People are looking for their passion, but we also have to search deeply for this part. Because our compassion is when we use our passion and strengths in the service of others. So when you use your passion and your strengths to help other people, that's what creates a purpose. Without that very last part, you may be successful, you may make loads of money, you may even be famous, but you won't feel joy in your heart because we're wired for service. And until we actually engage what we're passionate and strength and skilled at to serve others, it's not possible. So that's purpose and Dharma. And inside the book, I dive deeply into it in a whole chapter.
Thank you so much for sharing. So there are 2 last questions and then I let you go into your day. So the last question, or the almost last question is, in my life, forgiveness has been like one of the most important parts of my own spiritual path. Was there something you had to forgive in your life, and how did you do it?
I think the biggest thing that I've had to forgive in my life is myself. And that's because I think for a long time, I made a lot of mistakes when I was in my teens. I was always a good-hearted person, but I wanted to be cool and I wanted to fit in. And so I talk about it in the book and some of my mistakes. And I just, for a long time, I really judged myself for the mistakes I'd made. And even now I make so many mistakes, and I feel like the person that we need to forgive the most to begin with is ourselves. And forgiving yourself doesn't mean just letting yourself move on and not care and it doesn't matter. That's not the point. It's a deep healing process of saying, I know I have work to do. I know there's a long way to go. I know I'm not perfect, but I'm trying. That's forgiving yourself. Forgiving yourself is accepting all your flaws, knowing all your mistakes, and still saying, I'm with you. Just like you'd say to your friend, if you loved someone, you'd say to them, I know you've got issues right now. I know you're challenged right now, but I am with you. And to me, that's what I've really had to do to myself consistently, because sometimes the mind can trick you so much to just make yourself feel terrible about yourself. And you know, the best way of forgiving yourself is trying not to make repeated mistakes. And so you can make a mistake once, you may even make it a few times, but you want to try and limit it moving forward. And so in my life, I make so many mistakes, but I'm always trying to improve. And I understand I'm human, I'm not perfect, and I'll keep making them, but I have to forgive myself to do that. So that's probably what I would say is the biggest thing I'd have to forgive.
Thank you for sharing. It's beautiful. So the last question is one you probably know as well from the podcast from Lewis, from our friend. And it's, imagine it's the last day of your life. You had a beautiful life, but there has been a technical mistake and all of your videos are gone. Everything is gone, unfortunately. And I would come and give you a white sheet of paper and a pen. And I would tell you, Jay, you can write on this paper three wisdoms you would like the world to remember. What would you write down?
So I'd say the first one is from Picasso, and Pablo Picasso said that the meaning of life is to find your gift and the purpose of your life is to give it away. And that, to me, that statement just completely perfectly encapsulates the meaning and purpose of life. So that's that. That would be one. The second one would be a statement from Albert Einstein. And Einstein said that everyone's a genius, but if you judge a fish by its ability to climb a tree, it will spend its whole life believing that it's stupid. And so I would write that down because I want people to remember that you don't have to be a bird, be a lion. You don't have to be a fish, be a tiger. You don't have to be a zebra, be a giraffe. Just be you. Like, you know, just be you. Like, don't try and become everyone else. And the third and final message I'd say to people, which would be from, I would say that the third and final message I would write down would be from Martin Luther King. And he had a statement where he said that those who love peace need to learn to organize themselves as well as those who love war. And this part's really important for us right now in the world, because when we get into spirituality and love, it's really easy to think that these things are just woo-woo and like floating, as you said. And actually, and I get a bit of sometimes attract a bit of negativity for this. My belief is that sincerity and strategy have to work together. That spirituality and focus have to work together. That creativity or compassion and courage have to go together. And so let's not make love weaker by not being focused and organized and strategic about how to share love across the world. And when I say strategic, I don't mean manipulative. I don't mean a technique. I mean, being organized, you know, just being organized, because that's what it's really going to take if we want to flood the world with love.
Thank you so much. Jay, thank you so much for this beautiful, inspiring conversation. I had so much fun and I you're amazing. And for everyone listening in Germany, the book is out now, Das Think Like a Monk Prinzip, and read it. I read it today. It's amazing. And it's a really thick book. It's like, I was like, wow, it's many pages. And it's amazing.
Bigger in German. Look, I've got the US version here. It looks bigger in German.
We have many words. So no, it's an amazing book. And I just want to acknowledge you from the bottom of my heart that I'm so grateful that you really make spirituality and personal growth so down to earth and so available to so many people. And I'm just really, really, really grateful for the work you do and for all the, all the difficult moments you for sure had in your life, and that you went through them and that you just do what you do. So thank you. And I wish you just the best of everything in your life, and that you will stay healthy and happy and confident, and that we will hear so much from you. So thank you so much.
Now, Laura, you're so wonderful. And I'm not just saying this, like, I've been doing a ton of, you know, conversations and interviews, and all of them are special in their own way. And everyone's different in their own way. You know, there's some interviews that I do are 4 minutes on TV, 7 minutes on national TV. And obviously we've been talking for nearly an hour. And so I can be in a different pace and space here. But I just want to thank you for just holding this space today for us, because you really made the energy of the interview today. I was doing so many things. And as soon as I came in, it's like, I've been speaking and living and sharing at the pace that I love the most. And that's honestly credit to you. Even the tone of my voice is like exactly how I love to like be in my heart. Like, I've been in my heart this whole conversation, and that's because of you. So I actually want to take this, episode, and I want to upload it as one of my Friday episodes on my podcast, if you're okay with that.
That would be amazing.
And I'd love for people, and I'll link back to yours, but I want to share it on mine as well, because I'd love for people to hear it. So we'll grab the audio from you as well.
Thank you. So, well, I hope the next time we will see each other in person, and really from the bottom of my heart, just take care of yourself, please. The world needs you for as long as possible. Uh-huh. And take a little bit of time for yourself as well, so that you get through this everything right now with a lot of energy. Take care. Thank you so much, Laura.
Thank you. You're wonderful. Take care. And thank you to everyone who listened and watched. Take care, Laura. Bye.
Ich hoffe sehr, dass du jetzt vollkommen inspiriert und glücklich aus dieser Folge herausschwebst und ganz viel für dich mitnehmen konntest und dich auch nochmal darin bestätigt fühlst, wirklich einfach deinen eigenen spirituellen Weg zu gehen, dir zu erlauben, dich da selbst zu entdecken und zu erleben und an dich selber zu glauben und zu fühlen, dass es ein Weg ist für uns alle und dass es auch vollkommen okay ist, wer wo gerade bei sich auf welchem Weg steht und dass das genau richtig ist. Und ich freue mich riesig, wenn du bei mir bei Instagram vorbeischaust, @LauraMarlinaSeiler, mir deine Gedanken zu der Folge dalässt, was war deine wertvollste Erkenntnis, was nimmst du für dich mit, und ich schicke dir eine riesige Umarmung. Es ist einfach so schön, dass es dich gibt, und natürlich freue ich mich auch riesig, wenn dir der Podcast gefällt, wenn du mir hier bei iTunes oder wenn du es bei YouTube gerade gehört hast oder wo auch immer, wenn du mir eine Rezension dalässt, wenn du mir schreibst, was hat der Podcast vielleicht in deinem Leben verändert. Das ist für mich einfach immer so schön, das zu lesen, und inspiriert mich natürlich auch einfach weiterzumachen. Es macht mich immer ganz dankbar, das zu lesen. Und gibt es sonst noch irgendwas ganz Wichtiges im Moment, was ich mit dir teilen könnte? Ich glaube nicht. Ich glaube, es ist gerade alles einfach gut, so wie es ist. Und wenn du irgendwie News von mir haben möchtest, was gerade sonst so bei mir passiert, dann kannst du natürlich immer einfach auf meinen Newsletter abonnieren. Den findest du einfach auf meiner Webseite. Und in diesem Sinne, fühl dich von Herzen umarmt. Das ist so schön, dass es dich gibt. Und geh deinen Weg. Du machst das alles ganz fantastisch. Rock on und Namaste, deine Laura.